Good morning. Welcome to this call, which announces the creation of the Climate Equity Alliance. More than two dozen organizations from the research and advocacy, faith-based labor, civil rights communities have formed this alliance based on a shared belief that the urgent need to transition to a clean energy economy presents us with some critical choices, and that we should therefore approach climate policy not only as environmental policy, though it is certainly that, but also as economic policy and as civil rights policy that can advance principles of fairness and opportunity and equal access. The Alliance believes that the best way to advance those principles is to ensure that the strong policies needed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions also protect low and moderate income households and expand economic opportunity. On the press release sent to reporters on this call, you'll find at the bottom a link to a webpage where you're able to download a list of the six principles that all of the organizations in the Alliance have endorsed, which we call Principles for Addressing the Needs of Low and Moderate Income Workers, Families, and Communities Within Global Warming Legislation. I should emphasize that we're not putting forward as an alliance an agenda of detailed policy proposals at this time, though we hope to in the future. That said, there are members of the Alliance who have developed specific policy proposals, which they're happy to share with reporters wearing their individual organizational hats. On the subject of policies, it's notable that last week we saw the discussion draft circulated of the American Clean Energy and Security Act of 2009, authored by Representative Henry Waxman and Ed Markey. I want to be clear that the Alliance has not yet taken a position on the discussion draft. We are a coalition, after all, and we haven't had a chance to meet as a group since it was released last week. But I do think it's safe to say that the draft provides an excellent foundation on which to build legislation that provides both opportunity and protection to low and moderate income people. And we look forward to working with the authors, other members of the Energy and Commerce Committee, and other lawmakers to make sure that happens. I think it's also important to add that the draft's aggressive emission targets are consistent with the first of the six principles that bind this alliance, which states that we must limit carbon emissions at a level and at a timeline that science dictates to ensure that the worst environmental and economic consequences of global warming are averted. Unchecked, the impacts of global warming will be costly for everyone, but they will almost certainly hit low and moderate income people, including people of color, first and worst. Let me go through our list of speakers on this call, representing leadership from Alliance members. They will be in order: Bob Greenstein, Executive Director of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, who will talk about the principle we call Minimize the Pain. Phaedra Ellis Lampkin, CEO of Green for All, who will talk about the principle we call Maximize the Gain. Jerry Hudson, Executive Vice President of the Service Employees International Union, will also be joining us. He'll discuss why SEIU is a part of the Alliance. And Hillary Shelton, director of the NAACP Washington Bureau, who will discuss why the NAACP is a part of the Alliance. On that note, I will turn this over to our first speaker, Bob Greenstein.
Thank you, Jason. Due in part to the work, I think, of a number of the organizations that are members of this new Alliance, over the past year or two, there's been growing understanding and growing mention in climate debates of the need to protect low and moderate income households and to provide opportunity through green jobs. But there is a strong task in converting that general rhetoric or those general sentiments into concrete proposals as part of climate policy that deliver on those goals. I'm going to focus on the consumer relief part. Other speakers will focus on the economic opportunity and jobs components. The Alliance believes strongly that climate policy needs to include effective mechanisms to reach all low-income households and effectively offset cost increases on them and to ensure that there are not increases in poverty or hardship. As I'll explain in a minute, this is definitely doable as part of climate legislation. The stakes are high for two related reasons. Whether one looks at a Congressional Budget Office analysis or one we at the Center on Budget have done, even from just a 15% reduction in emissions, where one might get hopefully in a decade or maybe even less, the average increase in cost on households in the bottom fifth of the population, that's people with average incomes around $15,000, would be about $750 per household. Now, over time, as the cap tightens, there could be more pressure on costs. On the other hand, as efficiency and alternative energy improvements kick in, that could moderate increases in costs. It's very difficult to have a precise prediction of cost impact several decades down the road, but there is certainly a strong potential for it to be significant, and this leads us to the two reasons the stakes are high. One is one certainly doesn't want climate policy to have the unintended side effect of increasing poverty and hardship. Secondly, opponents of climate legislation are using, or we would say misusing, these figures or similar figures to argue that climate policy should not move forward because it necessarily will harm vulnerable households, when in fact, well-designed climate policy can assure that there aren't such adverse effects by auctioning emissions allowances and devoting an appropriate portion of the proceeds to effectively delivered consumer relief for low and moderate income households. This certainly is not a legitimate argument for not moving forward, and the Alliance, I think, views the work it is undertaking as designed both to protect and promote opportunity for vulnerable households and also to help advance the cause of needed environmental climate legislation. There is a working group within the Alliance that has been focusing on the consumer relief. It has concluded, as I noted, that it is important that the relief reach all low-income households, that it do so effectively, that it cover all of the impacts on household costs, not just home utilities, which would be half or less of the impact on low and moderate income consumers' budgets, and to do it in an effective way where the resources get to the households, not get soaked up in administrative costs or bureaucracy. To that end, very briefly, the working group has concluded that delivering such relief through utility companies is not the right approach. Again, half or more of the impact on consumer budgets is from areas other than home utilities, and artificially lowering, say, electricity prices would, under a cap, cause other energy costs to have to rise more. We do believe consumer relief can be provided in part through the tax code for low-income working families, in part through the electronic benefit transfer systems every state in the country already uses to provide low-income assistance to very low-income households, particularly people who are not in the tax code. And we also believe that the level of relief should be tied to the impact on energy costs that actually results. To the degree they go up more, the relief would be larger. To the degree they go up less, as efficiency and alternative energy kicks in, the level of rebates could be smaller. It would be tied to what actually occurred in the economy to offset the costs, protect low-income households, and also, as I noted, ensure that arguments that use consumer impacts as a reason for inaction are squarely addressed and set to the side.
Thank you, Bob. Phaedra, are you on?
I'm here, thank you. Green for All is really here because we think that climate policy offers an opportunity not only to mediate the negative things that are happening in our communities, but really to offer an opportunity both for economic development and environmental and quality for communities of color and communities disproportionately affected. And as an organization who's been working towards the creation of an inclusive green economy, we really want to be able to have an economy that lifts people out of poverty. And we believe that if climate policy can fight pollution, it can also alleviate poverty at the same time. And we're part of the Climate Equity Alliance really because we want to ensure that climate policies provide equal protection and also equal opportunity for all communities. We obviously know that the effects of climate change will hit, and of course have already hit, low-income communities and communities of color first and worst. So for us, it's important that there be bold action on climate now. With the Alliance, we're working to really make sure that climate policy is equitable, that it provides opportunity for all, and that it takes into account the needs of low and moderate income communities. For us, you know, as an alliance, we really believe that the climate policy should help build an inclusive green economy that not only provides the pathways into prosperity, but really expands opportunities for American workers and communities. You know, because the shift to a low carbon, clean, green economy has the potential to create large numbers of quality green jobs for American workers, but we think it can grow emerging industries, it can improve the health of low and moderate income people and people of color who we talked about suffer disproportionately from cancer, asthma, other ailments in essentially a pollution-based economy. I think more importantly for this alliance is the ability to be able to measure and quantify those things, which I think is what we're all looking forward to. And I think the shift really represents an opportunity to make cost-effective public and private investments that really help rebuild and retrofit our nation through training and job readiness programs and really ensure that those who most need work are prepared to do the work that most needs to be done. And, you know, I think Bob did an excellent job of laying out both our challenges and some of the potentials. And I think our hope is that working together, if we do this right, we'll really be able to make sure that both our planet and the people that inhabit it are not really just surviving, but in fact thriving in a clean energy economy.
Thank you, Phaedra. Jerry Hudson.
Hi. I'm happy that the Service Employees International Union has been able to help convene the Climate Equity Alliance. SEIU has been in the fight for economic justice for a long time and in many arenas. We know that dealing responsibly with climate change will transform our social and economic structures. We want to be sure that the changes to come will address the needs of our members and the communities where they live. Our members are mostly low and moderate income workers, and many of their communities are already overburdened with too big a share of our polluted air and poisoned soil. So when it comes to dealing with climate change, they want to be sure that the playing field will be level at this time. That's a commitment that SEIU shares with the other groups coming together in the Climate Equity Alliance. Our many constituencies are all intent on helping create a climate policy that addresses the needs of the most vulnerable communities while creating the real changes that will reverse the tragic degradation of our planet's air, land, and water. That's going to mean supporting those in Congress, the administration, and the policy community who understands that climate change is also economic policy and that it must be created and executed with a focus on fairness, opportunity, and equal access. There will be plenty of legislation and regulations over the next months and years aimed at building a green economy. SEIU members and leaders are already speaking out in public and reaching out to policymakers to advance some basic principles. For example, we know that inclusive training programs can help establish career paths to green prosperity for American workers and their families and communities. We know that a little assistance can go a long ways to ensuring that the cost of policy changes aren't borne by those who can least afford them. It's a great feeling to be joining the work of so many others, distinguished organizations that share these goals and are committed to the hard task of realizing them. We'll be teaching, preaching, and pounding the pavement to get the job done quickly and with real fairness to all. I have to apologize for not staying. I've got to get back to another meeting. So thank you for having us.
Thank you, Jerry. Mr. Hillary Shelton. Hillary, are you on?
Thank you so much. I forgot to hit the mute button. The NAACP is the nation's oldest and largest grassroots-based civil rights organization, with entities throughout the United States, literally in every state. As you can imagine, our constituency is a constituency of African Americans that are a disproportionately poor group in our country. As we've taken on issues of the environment in the past, and certainly in environmental justice, the issue has always been whether we would fight to keep out an entity that would further pollute or contaminate the areas that we lived in, sending carcinogens into the air, sending poisons into the soil, and creating havoc and disease in our neighborhoods. I once went to an area in Georgia and walked through a pristine working-class African-American neighborhood, and as you walked through, you could see the smokestacks of a manufacturing facility on just the other side of the creek. As we walked through, we put black bowls on the stairways of each of the houses in which someone in that house had contracted cancer or some other disease given by those carcinogens. Very well, as we turned around and looked, literally every house on the block showed a black ribbon. It was outrageous. The fight then ended up being between whether people could live in safety and security and without these poisons, or whether they'd have to live without jobs. This movement under the Climate Equity Alliance is one that finally fixes the problem, that indeed we can move to make sure we keep the polluters out, but also move to bring in industry that will not only preserve the environment, but also create jobs and opportunities and contracts and the development of small businesses. That's extremely important to us as we move forward. And with that, we're delighted to be part of the Climate Equity Alliance, and looking forward to the legislation that comes up in this Congress, both House and Senate, executive orders that may very well be issued by our new president, and other regulations that will come out of various government agencies. We are delighted to participate.
Hillary, thank you so much.